bum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum ba da dum bum ba dum bum ba dum bum bum ba dum bum bum. Welcome to Everyday Musicality, the podcast in which we discuss all things related to Gordon's music learning theory and how it can help unlock the inner musician that lives inside of all of us. I'm your host, Heather Scholdeis, music educator and faculty member for the Gordon Institute for Music Learning. In this episode, I talk about navigating the process of deciding how to adapt MLT for your own teaching setting. Hello and welcome to the Everyday Musicality Podcast. I'm sorry it's been so long since I've put out a new episode. I've actually been struggling with some issues with my voice for basically the last 2 months. I've had on and off hoarseness that doesn't seem to be connected to any sort of respiratory issue. So I am getting that looked at very soon. But in the meantime, it has meant that when I try to sing, it's not very pretty, especially because some of the pitches in my range where my voice has been having some frogginess are right around D, the D to A range that we say is the initial singing audiation range for young children. So that's a problem. I'm sorry I haven't been able to bring you any new episodes with musicking in them. I've had my Locrian episode all planned and ready to go, and I just haven't been able to sing enough to record it. So hopefully my issues will be resolved soon, and I will be able to sing in Locrian and bring you that episode in the near future. In the meantime, in today's episode, I was going to cover a topic that doesn't require me to sing at all. Before I get into today's topic, I wanted to let you know about some things that are going on with the Gordon Institute for Music Learning. The Gordon Institute for Music Learning, also known as GIML, G-I-M-L, has some fantastic upcoming events you might want to take advantage of. One of the things that GIML offers for members is monthly faculty hangouts. So these are monthly online events where people can just show up and ask whatever questions they might want to ask of the faculty member who's hosting that faculty hangout. Oftentimes, the faculty hangouts have a topic to guide the discussion. So the faculty member isn't going to come with a formal presentation, but they might come with some topic in mind, and a lot of the discussion will center around that topic. You can attend a faculty hangout and you can ask questions, or you can just come and be a lurker. And typically, faculty will also come with backup ideas in case no one asks questions. The next faculty hangout that GIML is going to be hosting will be on Sunday, March 26th at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, and this one will be on MLT-informed choral practice. That's right. For the first time ever this summer, GIML is hosting a Professional Development Levels course, or PDLC, focusing on choral music education, so applications of MLT for the choral music setting. This faculty hangout is going to be hosted by Josh Palki and Stuart Chapman Hill, both wonderful seasoned choral music educators who were experienced in teaching choir before they even discovered MLT, and they will be there to be able to discuss how they have incorporated MLT into their teaching practice, and also how Josh and Stuart were a part of the team that put together the proposal for this new choral track of GIML Professional Development Levels courses. So again, that's going to be on Sunday, March 26th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on MLT-informed choral practice. I'll put a link to that in the show notes in case you want to check it out or if you'd like to register. And remember, these hangouts are free for GIML members. Other upcoming events that you might want to check out, GIML has announced its summer 2023 PDLC offerings. Again, PDLC stands for Professional Development Levels Course, and there are courses happening at different locations around the United States. Personally, I'll be teaching an Elementary General Music Level 2 with Cindy Taggart at Michigan State University during the second half of June, and I'm also serving as co-site manager along with faculty member Jenny Fisher for Piano Levels 1 and 2 to be held at Eastern Michigan University, where I teach. So those Piano Levels 1 and 2 will also be taking place during the second half of June. You can find those details on those sites and all of Gimmel's summer offerings on the website. I'll link to that in the show notes as well. And then one last thing I want to mention as you're making your summer plans, you might want to consider attending the Summer Conference on Music Learning Theory in August. Every 2 years, Gimmel hosts the International Conference on Music Learning Theory. I think this year is the 8th or 9th conference that they have hosted, and it takes place in Oak Park, Illinois, which is just outside of Chicago. So this is August 1st through 3rd. It's a wonderful, nice, intimate, and fun conference all about music learning theory with presentations by practitioners, researchers, Gimmel faculty members. People from all over the world come to this conference to talk about music learning theory. There's also a research poster session and other opportunities to get involved in MLT discussions in music making. So check out the Gimmel website for information on that summer conference as well. Okay, getting into today's topic, since I am not able to sing, I instead am going to talk about something that will only require me to speak. And to make it easier on my speaking voice, I'm going to be doing some reading. I'm going to be reading an article that I published in the Gimmel Audia. That is Gimmel's journal that they publish. And I think this was in 2021. I published an article called Evading the MLT Police, Making Compromises Without Compromising Core Values. So I'm going to be reading this article out loud. And you're also welcome to check it out in print format. If you are a Gimmel member, you have access to all of the current and back issues of the Gimmel Audia under the members only section. So if you want to read this in print instead of listening to me speak, you can check it out there. And if you're not a member, here we go. Again, the article is called Evading the MLT Police, Making Compromises Without Compromising Core Values. Abstract. Dr. Gordon made strong statements about how his music learning theory should be implemented, often referred to by practitioners as quote-unquote rules. Contrary to popular belief, the MLT police are not going to come knocking on your door if you decide to do something differently. However, it is important to understand and carefully consider the reasoning behind Gordon's suggestions and to make thoughtful decisions when choosing to break the rules. In this article, the author uses the core values of MLT as a frame for conducting a cost-benefit analysis when deciding whether and how to adapt MLT, and demonstrates this process with several commonly debated aspects of MLT. Throughout my years as a music learning theory practitioner and Gimmel faculty member, I have heard many persons refer to certain quote-unquote rules of MLT. In our recent study of the Gimmel Virtual Mentoring Pilot Program, my co-author and I found the mentees had an initial desire to do MLT right and a fear of doing MLT wrong. That was in Jessica Von Mera and my article that we also published in the Gimmel Audia in 2021. That was a research study. The participants, the mentees, perceived the techniques and procedures learned in the Professional Development Levels course, or PDLC, as rules to be followed, and their mentors needed to reassure them that they were allowed to break the rules. For example, when one mentee was hesitant to make a change in sequencing, her mentor told her, "It's not illegal, and the MLT police are not going to come arrest you." In order for MLT to continue growing and evolving, we shouldn't be afraid to break the perceived rules. We can and should adapt MLT to meet the needs of our students, our teaching situations, and our educational philosophies. Rather than seeing Gordon's suggestions as rules to follow, we should instead focus on understanding why he made those suggestions and ensure that what we do in the classroom aligns with the core values of MLT. Core values of MLT. According to the website yourdictionary.com, quote, "Core values are the fundamental beliefs of a person or organization," end quote. Core values are guiding principles that help us determine if we are on the right path and fulfilling our goals. In her keynote address at the 6th International Conference on Music Learning Theory, Taggart urged that, quote, "In order for music learning theory practitioners to continue to grow and develop together as a Gimmel community, we must identify and use as a guide the core principles of music learning theory," end quote. Taggart outlined 10 core principles at the heart of MLT, which are as follows. 1. Audiation is the core of music learning theory. 2. Syntax and context are fundamental to audiation. 3. All children are musical and unique. 4. Children learn by doing. 5. Music is learned in much the same way that a language is learned. 6. Sound must precede sight. 7. Children need to experience a rich musical vocabulary and a wide variety of tonalities and meters. 8. Discrimination learning lays the foundation for inference learning. 9. Whole-part-whole sequencing enhances and deepens learning. And 10. Assessment improves instruction. Keeping in mind these core values of MLT and using them as a guide when we make instructional decisions will allow us to move forward in our teaching practices while holding true to the principles that Ed Gordon embraced, identified, and developed, Cindy said. There's nothing wrong with adapting MLT and choosing to do things differently than Gordon suggested. The key, however, is to be thoughtful and intentional when we do so. When deciding whether to make an adaptation, we need to take the time to reflect on what might be gained by making the adaptation, the degree to which the core values of MLT would be sustained, and whether the benefit of adapting outweighs any potential cost. Cost-benefit analysis. The concept of cost-benefit analysis can be a useful tool in deciding whether and how to adapt MLT techniques and sequencing. Cost-benefit analysis is a process frequently used in businesses in which the benefits of taking a certain course of action are weighed against the costs of doing so. This process enables one to think through the possible ramifications of the action being considered to arrive at a well-informed decision. Several mentors in the Gimmel Mentoring Program pilot use the process of cost-benefit analysis to help their mentees decide whether and how to adapt MLT in their own teaching practice. For example, one mentor assured his mentee, quote, "Always understand, like, what are the things that you're gaining when you make a decision like that, and things that you're losing, and sometimes you might have more gains than losses," end quote. Another mentee explained that her mentor had shared her own adaptations and the process through which she decided on them. Quote, "We're breaking the rules, but here's our reasoning, and this is how it's helpful, and maybe how it could not be helpful, and then we'd talk about it," the mentee said. When we consider potentially breaking a rule in adapting MLT, we need to weigh what we hope to gain against what may be lost, particularly in terms of the core values of MLT, and whether the potential benefit outweighs the cost. This process might involve asking ourselves questions such as, benefits. Why do I feel the guideline or rule doesn't work for me or my students? What am I inclined to do differently to solve or circumvent this issue? And what might we gain by making this change? And then costs. You might ask yourself, what is the reasoning behind the guideline or rule? If I make the proposed change, what might be sacrificed and to what extent would this still honor the core values of MLT? And finally, decision. Is the potential benefit of the adaptation worth the potential cost? Does the adaptation contradict any core values of MLT? In the next section, I will demonstrate this cost-benefit analysis using several MLT rules that I myself break or have heard others want to break. Example number one, do not use labels at the aural-oral level of learning. According to Gordon, labels should not be used until the verbal association skill level. The reason behind this is so students experience concepts and build skills in audiation prior to associating solfege or having the concepts explained. However, I found it challenging to give verbal instructions when practicing skills such as resting tone or macrobeat and microbeat at the aural-oral level. For example, I found myself wanting to call the resting tone something when inviting students to sing it on a neutral syllable at aural-aural. However, I also wanted to follow the rule of not using labels, so I initially tried calling it that special pitch. this quickly felt cumbersome and contrived, not to mention also a label in itself, so I eventually decided to just call it Resting Tone with my students. Because I was simply using the name Resting Tone and not giving a theoretical explanation for why the pitch was labeled as such, I considered this to be a reasonable compromise that did not defy the spirit of oral learning or violate a core value of MLT. I also made sure to model the resting tone extensively before introducing the label, which I typically did around November with my kindergarten students. I did the same when practicing macrobeat and microbeat, starting with modeling and initially calling them big beat and little beat until students developed some level of competency in performing and differentiating between the two. In addition to making it easier to give verbal instructions, introducing the labels of resting tone, macrobeat, and microbeat also helps students build understanding of that vocabulary before adding tonality, meter, and function names at verbal association. Therefore, I believe the benefits of using those labels at aural-oral outweigh any potential cost and still sustain the core values of MLT. Example number two, do not write out solfege for students. This is a rule I sometimes choose to break when students first learn pattern function names. When I was teaching elementary students, I printed each solfege syllable on cardstock, laminated them, and placed magnets on the back. I kept these along the side of my whiteboard, and on the first day we learned a new pattern function, I would place the appropriate cards on the board to assist students in remembering the syllables included in the new function. For example, I would display the cards do, mi, and sol vertically on the day students first learned to recognize tonic patterns in major. I encouraged the students to remember the pitches that were included in the function and frequently prompted them to sing the pitches from memory, for example, saying, what's in a major tonic pattern? Do, mi, sol, and nothing else, so they would internalize them. But some students appreciated having a reminder on the board as an initial memory aid. So why did Gordon advise us to not write out solfege? Because tonal solfege and rhythm syllables should act as signs, not symbols. In MLT, a sign is something we hear, while a symbol is something we see. If students are seeing, in other words, reading or writing solfege, then it's acting as a symbol, and you are inadvertently engaging them in symbolic association. However, in providing a visual reminder of the pitches included in a particular function, the written solfege is being used only as an initial memory aid and not as an audiational crutch. For this reason, I considered my adaptation to be a reasonable compromise that did not defy the spirit of verbal association learning or violate a core value of MLT. Similarly, an instrumental music teacher might show written solfege as an initial memory aid to help students remember fingerings for particular pitches, for example, in a fingering chart like in the Jump Right In instrumental series. If solfege is being read or written so that it functions as a crutch for what students lack in audiation, however, this is more problematic. I have seen teachers write out the solfege syllables for an entire song to assist students in playing the song on their instruments because the solfege tells them which buttons to push. In this case, the written solfege syllables are functioning as symbols, which students simply decode rather than audiating. That would violate the core value that audiation is the primary goal of MLT. Now, the MLT police will not come knocking on your door should you choose to show students solfege in this way. However, it is worth reflecting on whether making it faster or easier for students to learn a song is worth sacrificing audiation development. If we truly identify as MLT practitioners, then students' audiation development should always be at the forefront in our instructional goals. Example number three. Teach skills in LSAs before applying in classroom activities. Gordon stated that students should learn musical skills with particular content, in other words, functions and patterns, in learning sequence activities or LSAs before applying them in classroom activities. The reason for this suggestion lies in the core value that whole part whole sequencing enhances and deepens learning. Remember that in the whole part whole process, students are exposed to tonality and meter through repertoire and classroom activities, or the first whole. They learn to audiate and perform patterns in that context in LSAs, or the part, and then return to repertoire and classroom activities with greater understanding, the final whole. By first focusing on learning skills and content in a concentrated way in LSAs, students are subsequently better able to apply that understanding in classroom activities and thus bring more meaning to the repertoire. The reality for most music teachers, however, is that our contact time with students is extremely limited. If we follow the LSA units as written, there will be certain skills or content we simply will never get to before our students leave us. Therefore, we must make decisions regarding the skills and content we will prioritize in that limited amount of time. For example, I wanted to begin applying syllables and labels in unusual meter, which I prefer to call uneven meter. But this content doesn't appear until Rhythm Register Book 2. To compromise, I began using syllables and labels in uneven paired and uneven unpaired meter in classroom activities with my third grade students. Beginning to label tonality or meter is another time when I choose to teach certain skills first in classroom activities. The first verbal association learning sequence activities, which are R2A1 and T2A1, introduce students to many new concepts. For example, if R2A1 is taught as written, students must immediately learn that macrobeat syllables are due, duple meter is when microbeat syllables are due day, a macrobeat microbeat pattern has no tas, and we hear every due we audiate in an MM pattern. Trying to cover all that new information at once was always overwhelming and frustrating for both the students and me. For this reason, several weeks before we would begin that page, I started introducing the syllables for macrobeats, do, in classroom activities, and then also introduced the term duple meter for when the microbeats are due day. Doing this in classroom activities gave the students an opportunity to process that material before also having to learn MM pattern function, which equipped them to be more successful with the latter skill when we reached page R2A1. I set up T2A1 in a similar way, introducing in classroom activities that major tonality is when we're audiating do as the resting tone. Example number 4. Introduce notation using familiar functions. Gordon advocated that tonal pattern instruction should begin with arpeggiated patterns outlining basic harmonic functions, for example, tonic and dominant in major and minor, because this builds audiation of essential pitches. Additionally, the content learned at each level of the skill learning sequence should consist of familiar functions and patterns so that students are learning a new skill with familiar content. In contrast, I've heard several teachers explain that while they do teach arpeggiated patterns at earlier skill levels, they begin symbolic association, in other words, reading and writing notation, with stepwise tonal patterns because their students find them easier to read than arpeggiated patterns. It is important, however, to ask why this seems easier for students. For insight into this question, we might look to suggested strategies for tonal pattern instruction in preparatory audiation. For a child in acculturation, Reynolds and co-authors suggest tonal patterns be stepwise and sung in a legato style because this allows young children to explore pitch through vocal slides. However, when the child has moved to imitation, arpeggiated patterns should be sung in a staccato style to help them, quote, begin to audiate the separate pitches in the tonal pattern before they attempt to imitate them, end quote. Using this logic, it may be that reading or singing stepwise tonal patterns at symbolic association seems easier because students can slide from pitch to pitch rather than audiating. In order to read and sing an arpeggiated pattern, they must audiate each pitch before they sing it. Therefore, if we need to resort to stepwise patterns in order for students to demonstrate some level of accuracy with reading tonal patterns, perhaps they were not yet ready for symbolic association in the first place. Adapting patterns in this way, if we're compensating for a lack of audiation and instead encouraging imitation, would not be in alignment with the value that audiation is the core of MLT. However, there may be instances in which a teacher purposefully chooses to teach stepwise patterns with a specific goal in mind. For instance, when beginning instrumental students are learning to play the first few pitches on their instruments, the teacher might choose to teach diatonic patterns because playing them requires less advanced executive skills than playing arpeggiated patterns. The decision to teach stepwise patterns in this instance makes sense, provided the teacher realizes the focus of this instruction is on developing executive skills rather than audiation, and plans to focus on audiation development at other times or in other activities. Example number 5, move on when 80% of students have achieved their potential. When teaching learning sequence activities, Gordon suggested the teacher stay on a given page, or criterion, until at least 4 of every 5 students in a class achieve their potential. Although I do generally follow this rule, I've discovered it's not always realistic or productive for some pages. For example, way back during my student teaching, the students had never experienced LSAs before, so I began teaching T1A1, in which students sing only the first pitch of each tonal pattern, with 4th graders in January, and was still teaching it in March. The students had grown bored and frustrated, and so had I. Virtually every group of students I've taught since then has struggled with that page, T1A1, and I hear the same from other teachers. Many decide to skip that page altogether and instead start with one in which students echo full patterns. However, Gordon purposefully placed the skill of singing only the first pitch as the first tonal LSA criterion to encourage audiation rather than imitation, the latter of which may occur if students begin tonal LSAs with echoing full patterns. For this reason, I believe it is important for students to have the experience of starting tonal LSAs with singing only the first pitch. But I've compromised by setting a personal rule of thumb that we only work on T1A1 for 2 to 3 class periods and then move on. This helps encourage audiation, but prevents the experience of LSAs from growing tiresome, and the students always have much greater success when we come back to the skill in T1B1 and again at verbal association in T2B1 and T2C1. Conclusion. I hope these examples of applying cost-benefit analysis and adapting MLT have been thought-provoking, and I encourage you to try this process when deciding how you will adapt MLT for your students and setting. In her keynote address, Taggart asserted, quote, "Gimmel is at a critical juncture in its history. We need to consider how to move forward so that we don't stagnate while remaining true to the core of music learning theory," end quote. This is a sentiment Gordon himself put forth while he was alive. He frequently differentiated between carriers of the lore, those who simply carry out the ideas of others, and creators of the lore, those who actively contribute to shaping ideas and practices and moving them forward. And Gordon adamantly encouraged us to put ourselves in the latter category, the creators of the lore. Even in his reference handbook for using learning sequence activities, Gordon advised, quote, "Although it will be discovered that there are fundamental principles associated with learning sequence activities, students learn best and teachers are most comfortable when techniques are adapted to the personality and teaching style of the teacher," end quote. Dr. Gordon is no longer here to guide us, so it is now our responsibility to act as ambassadors for MLT and help it continue to evolve in a way that would make him proud. As a co-creator of the MLT lore, I look forward to continuing the conversation with all of you. And I hope you enjoyed my reading of that article. Again, that was found in an issue of the Gimmel Audia, which members can access on the Gimmel website under the Members Only section. If you're not a member of Gimmel, I encourage you to check it out. There are lots of benefits for members that make it worth your membership dues. And the membership dues are really quite reasonable compared to a lot of other organizations. In the next episode of the podcast, I have not one, not two, but 3 special guests scheduled to be on, and I hope you will tune in 2 weeks for their episode, and then hopefully after that I'll have some answers to why my voice has been giving me issues, and I hope that will be alleviated so that we can do some musicking in Locrian. In the meantime, if you have questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please get in touch. You can email me or send me a voice memo at everydaymusicality@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and let's keep musicking every day.